Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. The election for governor of Massachusetts is still 10 months away, but the race is taking shape. Today, Charlie Baker, who's regarded as the leading Republican candidate for governor, announced his running mate. He's teaming up with former Shrewsbury State Representative Karen Pulido, who will run for lieutenant governor.
Karen and I have had a bunch of conversations about our vision for Massachusetts. And one of the things I came to believe early on is that her fundamental focus is on how you create a great Massachusetts for the next generation, this generation and the next generation of Massachusetts families.
Charlie Baker and Karen Pulido made their joint announcement this morning. And joining us to talk about the first formal ticket in the race to succeed Deval Patrick is Boston Globe political reporter Jim O'Sullivan. Hi, Jim. Welcome back to the show.
Anthony, how are you?
Good. Good to have you. So we've heard recently from Charlie Baker on this show. So let's talk a little bit about Karen Pulido. She ran unsuccessfully for state treasurer in 2010, the same year Charlie Baker ran for governor the first time. Tell us something about Karen Pulido.
Well, today she described herself as a mom, a business owner, and an optimist. And she actually left it to Baker to point out that in 2010, when he was running for governor, as a state treasurer candidate, she received more votes than he did. He, of course, is running in a three-way race against Governor Patrick and then-treasurer Tim Cahill. And Pulido up against now-treasurer Steve Grossman actually outpointed Baker on votes. So that certainly made her a draw as a potential running mate.
Yeah, now she was a state rep from central Massachusetts. That's arguably one of the more conservative parts of the state.
Right.
Does that help the Baker campaign in any way?
Certainly it does. You look at Pulido and you see geographically she helps. There was a post-election poll in 2010 that showed Baker losing women by 24 points, which is a huge margin. She said today that she thinks her selection for the ticket is going to help him with that, too.
All right. Well, now, the Democratic Party is already trying to paint Pulido as a Tea Party candidate. Here's how she responded today when NECN reporter Allison King asked her if she minded being put under the Tea Party umbrella.
Thank you for the question, Allison. I'm going to smile. <It's okay. laughs> No, the real answer to that is obviously this is my umbrella. My titles that I apply to me are obviously, first of all, mom, a business owner, and an optimist. When you want to talk politics, political labels, I'm a fiscal conservative. Back to my days when I served in the Board of Selectmen here in Shrewsbury, throughout my career in the legislature, I believe in small government, lower taxes, less regulation.
So there it is. So is that Tea Party label fair? It sounded like she didn't really want to go there.
She doesn't want to go there. And the Baker campaign has been working assiduously today to paint her as a moderate, putting out she's got a perfect rating from an abortion rights group. She now favors gay marriage after being in favor of civil unions. They put out a list of sort of the more Democratic and centrist-friendly votes she's taken over time. But there's no question that she has sort of work to curry favor with the conservative branch of the Republican Party.
Yeah. And speaking of that now, I sort of want to ask, you know, what this does for Charlie Baker, because the last time he ran for governor, he chose North Shore Republican Richard Tesei as his running mate. Tesei is gay, politically moderate. Does Pulido represent a different kind of running mate then?
It's a different selection, to be sure. Tesei is certainly more liberal than Pulido, but in a way, it's Baker reaching out geographically. It's him reaching out gender-wise. Again, he's going to a legislator, somebody who's had time up on Beacon Hill, like himself. So it's a different kind of selection. But it's also, when you look at the Republican Party in Massachusetts, it's just not a real deep bench. There aren't a lot of prominent Republicans out there who want to run for lieutenant governor.
Hmm. And what would the Baker-Pulido ticket point to when it comes to Karen Pulido's legislative accomplishments?
One thing they talked about today is her fiscal conservatism, and I think you heard that in the clip. She's going to hammer that. She's going to talk about common sense solutions. She's going to, you know, sort of align with Baker on. I think she'll move a little bit more to the center rhetorically anyway, and talk about how it's what she used today is Massachusetts deserves better on Beacon Hill. So they'll hold themselves up what's worked for Republicans in the past, which is sort of a check against the Democratic legislature.
Hmm. Now, Pulido's time on Beacon Hill was not without some controversy. Remind us about what became known as Red Sox Plate Gate.
Right. She helped friends and family obtain sort of these these highly sought, low numbered plates with the Red Sox insignia on them. And it's something that she has said. There was no impropriety. I did nothing wrong. There was no conflict. But it's certainly something that Grossman highlighted in 2010. And I assume you'll see Democrats use it again this time.
Now, speaking of the Dems, of course, they're calling her a Tea Party conservative, as we mentioned. But Baker says she's in much more in the tradition of moderate Massachusetts Republicans. In fact, he compared her to the late Governor Paul Cellucci. Do you think that's a fair comparison?
They both claim former governor, the late Governor Cellucci, as a political mentor. And it is interesting that the Republicans now sort of skip over the Romney-Healey years, despite the fact that Romney won a tough race in 2002. They like going back to the Bill Weld, Paul Cellucci days of these sort of New England Republicans, the traditional New England Republican who's maybe more fiscally conservative and socially moderate. And Cellucci and Weld obviously remain popular. I mean, not just Republican voters, but moderate voters as well.
All right. Well, that's Jim O'Sullivan, political reporter for the Boston Globe, talking about the Republican ticket for governor and lieutenant governor of Charlie Baker and Karen Pulido. Jim O'Sullivan, thank you so much.
Thank you.
The emergency contraceptive pill Plan B was first approved in 1999. It was cleared for over-the-counter sales in 2006, and since earlier this year, it's been available even to girls under 17. Lots of data show the pill can prevent pregnancy, and yet since it was first approved many years ago, the unintended pregnancy rate hasn't changed at all. Then came stories last week that Plan B is ineffective with heavier women. So does all this mean that it's time for a Plan C? Carrie Goldberg, co-host of Common Health Blog, is with us now. Hi, Carrie.
Hey, Anthony.
So remind us what Plan B is and how effective it can be.
Okay, so Plan B is a hormonal pill that is a form of emergency contraception, which means that if you have unprotected sex or your birth control fails, you can take this contraception to try to fend off pregnancy up to about the first 5 days after you have had that unprotected sex. So it's emergency fallback Plan B contraception.
And it's effective. Mm-hmm.
And it is pretty effective. Studies show that it's between 75 and 89% effective on an individual level. In other words, when they test it in individual women, it seems to work that well, which is why it's such a mystery that it doesn't seem to have made a dent in the overall rate of unintended pregnancy.
And what explains that, Carrie? I mean, I know there are at least a couple of theories out there. Tell me about
them.
There
are. Well, first of all, it's not very widely used yet. About 11% of sexually active women have ever tried Plan B. And then the theories are that maybe it's that the women who most need Plan B aren't using it when they're actually at highest risk for pregnancy, like around ovulation, or maybe they're just not using methods that are effective enough. And so women should shift to more effective types of emergency contraception.
And we're going to hear about some of those other methods in a moment. But Carrie, first, tell us about what we've been hearing in recent days, that Plan B is apparently less effective with heavier women. And I'm wondering if this might explain why the unintended pregnancy rates haven't changed.
It could be, because goodness knows a lot of American women are overweight or obese. But this is something that has been known to contraception specialists for quite a while, that in fact the effectiveness of Plan B appears to drop off the heavier a woman gets. And that's part of why family planning advocates are now starting a new campaign that would try to push more effective forms of emergency contraception. And there are two of those. One is a copper IUD, or intrauterine device, and the other is a relatively new pill that uses a different hormone than Plan B called Ella.
Okay, and to tell us more about that, let me welcome Dr. Danielle Roncari. She's medical director at the Planned Parenthood League of Massachusetts, also director of family planning at Tufts Medical Center. And Dr. Roncari, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
It's good to have you in. So your organization fought successfully to make Plan B more accessible. And before we talk about this new campaign for other forms of emergency contraceptives, what's your take on why Plan B hasn't helped bring the rate of unintended pregnancies down?
Well, I think a lot of what Carrie said is absolutely correct. I mean, certainly one issue is access. Making Plan B now over-the-counter for everyone, regardless of age, is certainly one piece to help that. But really, what the latest research is showing is that perhaps the most effective methods of emergency contraception mostly the IUD and to some extent Ella just aren't really being used at all. And women are really not that well educated about the most effective methods.
Well, tell us a little bit about these other methods. How does an IUD work as a morning after device?
So the IUD has many different mechanisms of action, and we do know it's a little unclear of how it works as a morning after device. We do know that copper is toxic to sperm, and that's probably one of the ways that the IUD works to help prevent pregnancy.
And what about Ella? Tell us a little something about that.
Ella really appears to work by delaying ovulation, and that's perhaps another reason it's the same mechanism of action as Plan B. It's probably another reason why emergency contraception just hasn't been all that effective. If a woman's already ovulated that month, she's a little bit out of luck.
Now, both the IUD and Ella, these would be obviously prescription only and would require a physician's assistance as opposed to an over-the-counter Plan B, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So, you know, Carrie reported in her piece that because Plan B is available over-the-counter, a lot of doctors are less likely to feel like it's part of their job to recommend emergency contraception. So do you think doctors are more likely to recommend these other two methods because they are available only by prescription?
I think even within the medical community, there's still a little bit of hesitancy, certainly around the IUD. IUDs are also difficult to insert same day exactly when a woman needs it. There's still insurance plans that aren't covering these methods. It's still difficult to have somebody walk in for an IUD visit. It's one of the things we're able to do for women at Planned Parenthood. You know, and I think that people aren't necessarily aware of how much more effective IUDs are than some of the other methods.
And Carrie, let me come back to you and ask you about cost for these other forms of emergency contraception, because that has to be an issue as well.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, Plan B is about $50 over the counter, whereas getting an IUD inserted can be several hundred dollars. But this is where family planning advocates are hoping that Obamacare may be a game changer, because it says that, in fact, all forms of contraception are supposed to be covered without a copay. So that could be a game changer in the coming months. Mm.
And beyond cost, isn't this also about making women better informed about all of this?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I am a huge fan of the IUD. I've been on Radio Boston before talking about how much I love my own IUD. And yet I, who cover contraception, had no idea until this campaign that copper IUDs are a form of morning after method or emergency contraception. So I suspect that getting the information out there will make a big difference.
All right. Well, that's Carrie Goldberg. She's co-host of WBUR's Common Health blog. And Dr. Danielle Roncari, she's the medical director of the Planned Parenthood League of Massachusetts and director of family planning at Tufts Medical Center. Dr. Roncari, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Carrie Goldberg, thank you as always.
You're welcome.
And listeners, you can find a link to Carrie's Common Health post on this subject at radioboston.org. And stay with us. Up next, Massachusetts may do better than other American students on international achievement tests, but we still get beat out by kids from Finland, South Korea, Switzerland, and a bunch of other countries. So what can they teach us? Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.